Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College podcast, along with Jim Schoeter and Mike Lanana. I'm John Manuel, brought to you with all of our college coverage by Louisville Slugger. Visit them on Instagram or on Twitter, at Slugger Nation. Those things are unchanged despite last week's big news, and you can go to our Facebook page at Baseball America, and there was a lot of lively conversation there, speaking of Louisville Slugger, about the sale of the brand name last week to Wilson. So we welcome your feedback on that. Just good to see people have strong feelings about their baseball equipment, and I kind of appreciate that more and more the longer I'm here. So I think the Louisville Slugger people love the interaction and the loyalty people have to their brand. It was really evident last week. But guys, people are very loyal, and their loyalty is evident for the brands in college sports. And people definitely love to root for laundry. And if you're in the Southeastern Conference, you have a lot of good laundry to root for in college baseball. And we have a little change at the top of our rankings, guys, and LSU losing its first series of the year at home to Kentucky kind of opened things up for us in some lively debate. And Mike and Jim, you could have had a point counterpoint. You guys were on opposite sides of this. I think I jumped back and forth between both sides, but we basically didn't even debate LSU. But LSU, Vanderbilt, and Texas A&M were our top three teams last weekend. LSU is the only one that's lost a series. They lost a series recently, so really the debate wound up being between Vanderbilt and Texas A&M. Jim, you had the A&M side of the debate. Mike, you were on the Vanderbilt side of the debate. Vanderbilt wound up winning out in this debate. What's kind of, the case, Jim, the counterpoint case for Texas A&M, which is number two in our newest rankings?
Well, so, I mean, starts off with the fact they're 27-2. They still have not had a losing weekend.
Kind of amazing.
Just look at obviously they did play a soft schedule first 3 weeks, but the last 4 weeks they played good competition every weekend. They went 3-0 with the Houston College Classic, beat Nebraska, who we have ranked now, Houston, who's ranked, and then they beat Baylor. Obviously, Baylor's not that great, but still a Big 12 team. And the conference schedules are fairly comparable. It's my opinion anyway. A&M played a tougher conference schedule. I mean, they both played Auburn, but obviously A&M just beat Missouri, who just beat South Carolina the week before. And Missouri's a quality team.
Yeah, quality week, especially the starting pitching. Mm-hmm. Missouri's, as you guys talked to, mm-hmm. which one of you guys talked to?
I did the
Tim
Jamison. Yeah.
I mean, that's a veteran weekend mm-hmm. rotation and some power arms there as well. And you would think they kind of had an advantage mm-hmm. on the mound going into the weekend with A&M, and it didn't really play out that way.
Exactly. And so they take care of that. They win that series. They swept Auburn, which Vandy lost the game to Auburn. Granted, that was on the road, but and then the other series that A&M played was flicking who their other conference opponent. Well, oh yeah, Alabama. They won a series out of Alabama, it's going to be a regional team at least. Where Vandy's other series was against Arkansas, who's
not so much.
But last 4 weeks A&M's played quality teams. Vandy has had one losing weekend at the Dodger Town. I mean, if A&M played in that series, maybe they would have a losing weekend too. I mean, I think we do. I do kind of grant that I think Vanderbilt is more talented, and if they played on a neutral field, would probably take Vanderbilt. But in terms of resume, if we're just grading them on resumes, which at this point in the season we pretty much are, then I think I kind of like A&M's a little better.
I think there's a good case to be made there, and I think you made the case fairly well. A&M's resume in SEC play, they're 7-2 in the league. It's a little stronger, a little more impressive to me than Vanderbilt 7-2 in the league. That said, I think what wound up kind of carrying the day, Mike, is that Vanderbilt's pretty good. they had the ones, they had the one rough weekend. They're 22-6 is pretty good, and they were already ahead. So I guess it was harder to make the case for A&M to kind of to jump them. But the other part of this debate kind of is the talent debate. I think that's where it really starts for Vanderbilt is even the game they lost this weekend, Walker Buehler pitched really well in that game himself. Didn't walk anybody, pitched into the sixth inning, didn't give up any earned runs. I know Gay did give up 5 runs, and the top of their lineup is just keeps performing, whether it's Wiseman or Reynolds or Wheel or Dansby Swanson.
Will Toffee homered for the first time this weekend.
Yeah, so and that's the other part. So Will Toffee's been pretty consistent, pretty decent. Now Tyler Campbell has kind of helped them win a game offensively. It seems like the longer this goes, Toffee and Kendall are freshmen. These guys are talented freshmen. So the more we go into the year, big shock, Vanderbilt's pretty good at player development too. Their lineup just keeps getting a little bit deeper, and we've seen their pitching depth already in play this year.
Yeah, I could certainly see the argument for Texas A&M based on the resume this year, but I think part of part of the reason why I went with Vanderbilt is you just look at the potential of this team. You look at how far they're going to go. You look at their ceiling. And you really, there really isn't a better team in the country. I mean, obviously LSU is right there, but I mean, Vanderbilt, you look at their rotation. Carson Fulmer has been outstanding. Walker Buehler is getting back into form. You know, even Jordan Sheffield now in that rotation, he's a great arm on that.
It's a pretty good arm. It's a pretty good Sunday, pretty good number three starter arm.
Yeah, so they're so stacked in the top of that lineup. But I know obviously Dansby Swanson is the guy who gets all the headlines. But Reisman has been fantastic this year. I had a scout who was really high on him. Thought he was been great this year. And you know, I don't know. I just if you look at Vanderbilt and Texas A&M matched up in a 3-game series, I would pick Vanderbilt to win just based on the talent on those two teams.
That's a good question. That's a very tough question of who would be favored in that weekend series.
I mean, we'll see what happens with A&M's pitching. I mean, hasn't caught up with them yet. You kind of are waiting for it to. I mean, you lose two, you lose Stubblefield before the year, now without Minter. I mean, Grayson Long's been great, and Matt Kent's pitched in really well, but, you know, well, that's kind of the one different, you know, that's, you just kind of wait and see where that happens with, you know, how that holds up, and you just kind of haven't seen that team in person. It's, I mean, they can really hit, but they're kind of, I would say Vanderbilt's definitely more athletic, you know, A&M's, I mean, they do have some, I mean, obviously Nick Banks is very athletic, you know, really, you know, real quality prospect and all, but I mean, I'd say that team is more good college hitters.
Right.
As opposed to Vandy is, you know, more draft guys.
More prospecty for sure. And both teams go on the road this coming weekend. And they don't play in the regular season. They're not on each other's schedule. It's going to happen when you have a 14-team Southeastern Conference. It's going to happen a lot. But Texas A&M, I just was on their schedule page, and I've already navigated away. That was stupid. Vanderbilt's at Georgia this weekend. So Red hot Georgia, which already has home series wins against Florida State and South Carolina.
We thought about putting them on the our watch list for the top 25. We kind of held off at least for now. But
They kind of snuck onto the back of the watch list this weekend. But then, you know, Kentucky is A&M's at Kentucky next weekend. And Kentucky, just coming off a series win at LSU. And Kentucky's, you know, they're pretty battle-tested as any team. They're on the watch list this week for the top on our tracker. And they've played 12 games against top 25 competition. They're 5-7 in those games. So both those series, I think, present really good road tests for these top two teams. Guys, kind of what went wrong with LSU this weekend? It seems like it was a bullpen failure one day, and just kind of also some credit to Kentucky this weekend with a classic Sunday SEC slugfest. I know, what's your takeaway, guys, from this weekend with LSU? Anything that concerns you or worries you? I mean, Jake Godfrey getting not making it through two innings, I guess, kind of stands out to me a little bit, Mike.
Yeah, that concerns me a little bit, but I mean, like you said, Sundays a lot of times in the SEC especially are going to be slugfests. You know, I look at it, for me, I look at it as just an off weekend for LSU more than anything. I don't put a whole lot of stock into it, and you look, and Alex Lang had another excellent outing. Jared Poche was excellent again on Friday, and they're going to hit, and, you know, I'm not concerned with this weekend. I think you give credit to Kentucky for a good series win, and they're certainly on the radar for us, but I think LSU is going to be fine.
You know, you only have three more home series for LSU in conference play the rest of the time. They got four series left on the road, so that's going to be interesting to watch with that team, because when you lose a home series, it does kind of make things a little bit uphill. They have to play A&M later this year. I think that sticks out to me, guys, in the SEC West. You've got A&M and LSU, both in our top three. A&M's already opened a 2-game lead on LSU. Not that winning the division necessarily matters that much, but it's better than not winning the division. But then you're looking at the rest of the conference. Arkansas, Alabama, and Ole Miss, all three of those teams are within 2 games of 500. Mississippi State has a gaudy overall record, but they've lost their last three conference series. They're 3-6 in the league, and Auburn's 3-6 in the league. Jimmer, I get the sense that you feel like Alabama is maybe the best team of that group, maybe has one of the better resumes. We know Ole Miss has had a very good, difficult schedule. They've got some good wins, some quality wins, and some quality losses on that schedule for the Rebels. Obviously, we like Mississippi State coming into the year. They have not rewarded our faith in them. Thanks a lot, Bulldogs. But what? Who's the third best team in the SEC West? I put it to you first, Jim Schoenert. Is it Auburn? Is it Alabama? Is it Ole Miss? Is it the Bulldogs? I think we probably don't think it's Arkansas.
No. I mean,
that's a tough call.
I feel like it should be Mississippi State, but I mean, they have been, what, four? I mean, they have not won a series yet, an actual conventional weekend series.
Right.
I mean,
and they were shut out back-to-back games by Auburn this weekend. That's exactly. Pretty concerning.
Yeah. I mean, I like Alabama's. I mean, we liked Alabama's talent. They've got, especially on the mound, they haven't pitched that well yet. I mean, they haven't been bad, but they just haven't really, lit it up yet. But I mean, we like some of the arms they have there, and we love Mikey White's been doing his part. He's hitting over 400, but kind of the rest of that lineup's got to pick it up a little bit. But
Mikey White's had a great year so far. And I was talking to a scout. I just did a piece on the shortstop class, the college shortstop class, as part of our draft notebook last issue. And I guess my Kyle Holder man crush has gotten pretty obvious to people. So I've talked to some scouts about that. And I was talking to a guy about Mikey White, and he was very skeptical about Mikey White's offensive ability, the pro level, with a very high hands in his stance. He's kind of got a dead start. Doesn't really have a big trigger. All that guy's done is hit, though. Everybody loves this guy from a makeup standpoint. And he's really done a nice job. Offensively, that team does not have the deepest lineup. I mean, they've got a couple of outs in the lineup right now. Georgie Salem's really had a disappointing season for them. There's a lot of strikeouts in that lineup. So it's a little bit surprising. They've actually kind of not been the team we thought they'd be. I thought they'd be a much more offensive team.
Yeah, we had them as a borderline preseason top 25 team.
Yeah.
Because of the,
they were one of our eight for Omaha last year. I think we thought they'd be a really good offensive team, and you kind of have to see if the pitching developed. The pitching's been all right, but the offense really hasn't gotten to the point that we thought it would be for Alabama. Like you said, Mikey White's kind of the star of that team. He gets a lot of the attention, but it hasn't quite gone that way. Casey Houston's had a great year, but outside of those two guys, not a lot of consistent offensive performance for the Crimson Tide.
Just
kind of
looking through a few of these things. I mean, I kind of touched on this in weekend preview. I mean, the RPI is rarely an issue for SEC teams, but I mean, got Arkansas is outside. Mississippi State's outside the top 100 right now on Warren Nolan. Mostly because they played all those home games. Which
Mississippi State and Arkansas are both outside the top 100. That is really surprising.
And Ole Miss's strength of schedule will be. They just have to finish over 500 as long as they're, because they'll be up there because they actually did play a good schedule. So is Alabama, but I mean, Mississippi State. I mean, they're down there at where they're 120 something.
Right.
They played all those home games. First four. I mean, that series at Alabama last week was the first time they'd left home all year, and I mean, that's gonna hurt them.
It's gonna hurt them
a lot.
I mean, please hammer, don't hurt them, but the conference schedule really has to help them.
Yeah.
Because the non-conference definitely left them in trouble. And you have a very intriguing next weekend series with South Carolina going to Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's two desperate teams.
They are. There should be some real desperation there, Mike, because South Carolina, I listened to some of them driving home Sunday from South Florida. That was, and the Gamecocks really mixed things up this week, losing that series at home to Georgia. So it's the first time they've lost a series at home to Georgia since 1994. How long ago is that? I was in college. That's how long ago that is. Not at either of those colleges. But number two, they really mixed their lineup up. Clark Scalamiro got his first start in a long time. Gene Cohn, Jordan Gore, they kind of mixed up the top of their lineup. Jack Weinkoop came out of the bullpen, wound up getting the save there. We've kind of talked about their bullpen issues. I think South Carolina showed a little desperation by jostling the lineup and mixing things up there. This is really I'm fascinated by this weekend series, the South Carolina-Mississippi State series. Mike, what's your take on, I'm kind of shifting to the east, but South Carolina and Georgia, what stood out the most to you about that series and kind of this SEC in general here?
Yeah, well, South Carolina is still looking for, a win against a quality opponent. They haven't gotten it so far this year, and I know I really liked them in the preseason. We all liked them in the preseason. We had them up to number eight, I believe, at some point this year, too. They have a lot of talent on that team. It's just, I think it is figuring out the lineup and the right configuration in that group. They have a lot of guys who, like Max Schrock hasn't hit to his capability. And I know Destino has cooled off a bit for them after getting off to a hot start. And, they do need to figure things out, in the back end of that bullpen, too.
We talked about that last week on the podcast. Mm-hmm. We had that question, and then all of a sudden, so Tyler Widener blows it at midweek, blows a game against Coastal Carolina, winds up getting the loss there. I guess I shouldn't say it was him. It was Reed Scott, who I think was credited with giving up the two runs in the bottom of the eighth that Coastal Carolina went up time that game with. But he pitched well the first four plus. And the first four innings was the plus part of that four plus that wound up giving up those runs. But they had a lead. They couldn't protect it in that game. They wind up moving Scott to the weekend rotation, putting Weinkoop in the closer role, kind of like in a moment of truth guy, their most experienced guy. It's kind of the Mississippi State approach to handling your pitching staff. So it's kind of stunning. Like you said, I think the offensive troubles have been part of that. But they just haven't really played a complete series yet, Mike. I think you bring up a good point. They just don't really have an impressive series win on the resume. I'm not sure that, really, I think for South Carolina, you're at the point where you're kind of wondering, can they host a regional? Right now, they really don't have a great case for it. Their RPI is in the 50s. There should be some real desperate teams.
It's going to be fascinating to see. We got these four teams at the top. I mean, can they all get national seeds? I mean, that seems unlikely.
Right. You got to think one of those teams is probably going to drop back.
One of them is going to drop back. But, I mean, there may not be another host. May not be another host in that out of the SEC, which would be low for them to only have four.
It would be. It would be unusual for them to have. It'd be crazy to have four national seeds. Not crazy. It'd be significant and impressive.
Pretty sure it's unprecedented. I'll have to go through the history books. But
I think it probably has happened
time. There have been three, and I think there was one year where all three from the SEC East had one.
Right.
I don't know if there's ever been four from.
I think Florida. They came through a nice test this weekend. They losing the opener to Alabama, but then coming back and winning the series. Mm-hmm.
Getting Logan Shore bouncing back is that's a big for them.
That was huge. He gives up no home runs this week after the bevy he's given up.
Kept it in the ballpark.
He did.
Yeah. And AJ Puck kind of riding the ship a bit out of the bullpen is encouraging.
But they have to go back on the road. So when they've gone on the road this
year, Missouri.
That's it. They haven't played great on the road. They lost a game at UCF when they played on the road. They lost a series at Ole Miss on the road. Now they'll go to Mizzou. We'll see what the weather's like in the other Columbia. I don't know how the SEC has like two Bulldogs, three Tigers, and two Columbias, for crying out loud. I mean, even their cities are repeating each other as the league extends its footprint. But, the nice midweek matchup coming up tomorrow with Florida and Florida State. But Mizzou with a creditable performance this weekend at Texas A&M. But in Missouri and Florida, the winner of that series kind of has a leg up on being a regional host. I would imagine both could be. Missouri has one of the smaller ballparks in the SEC, and from an attendance standpoint, it's not great. But if Missouri wins this series against Florida, they have an inside track to being one of those regional hosts. So that's a fascinating one to look at. And I'm wondering, Mike, I know Jim has talked about a decent amount. Is there an SEC West team out of that mix of teams that are all under 500 in the league that stands out to you that's the best team out of that group?
I do like Ole Miss. I think they've played a very competitive schedule so far. I mean, they're 14-14 right now on the season, so you know it's tough to put them in the top 25 with that kind of record. But I think the schedule that they've played and the success that they've had, and they do have some talent on that roster. I do like that. You know, Errol Robinson is short, and J.B. Woodman out in center, and Sykes Orvis, a nice veteran bat in the middle of the lineup.
Great mustache.
Really a great stash game.
Extra power.
Yeah. It's a plus-plus stash tool. But
he does.
They need to figure out a Sunday starter. Brady Bramlett has been great coming back from surgery, and Christian Trent's a quality college arm in front of that rotation, a quality left-hander. But they haven't really found a guy on Sunday. Sam Smith has really struggled for them this year. He had been dealing with a hernia last year.
Plus, he lost a lawsuit. I mean, really, it's been a rough month for Sam Smith. Sorry. Other Sam Smith.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know.
Just trying to drop a little pop culture. And not usually my bailiwick of 21st century pop culture. It's usually 20th century.
John, don't do me like that.
That's right. I'm sorry. I can't even give you a Sam Smith impersonation. I know the Stay With Me. That's his big song, right? That's the one he ripped off from Tom Petty, right?
Yeah. So, and Tom won't back down. That's the thing about Tom.
That's well played. I think those work better on Twitter than they do on a podcast. I could be wrong. Let us know at podcast@baseballamerica.com about Mike's pun game is very strong and on Twitter. I think it worked well here, though. That was well played.
Thank you. Well played. I appreciate it. I'm well versed in Tom Petty songs. So.
You are better than I am. I was going to say that Ole Miss, the thing that jumps out to me, and I wish I could play off Sam Smith again, but I can't. They can't hit. Right. They can't hit, and it's really weird to see the spread of teams in college baseball. Some of the teams really have offensive numbers that look like they used to look, like Wake Forest has crazy offensive numbers that look like the pre-BB Corps era.
Yeah. UCF.
UCF. Yeah. They pound the ball all the time.
Yeah.
Ole Miss looks like, you know, dead ball
era. Stuck in 2014. Come on.
Yeah.
They're hitting 245 as a team overall, and in their three league series, they're hitting 227. You know, they're scoring four runs a game in league games. I mean, that's probably not going to get it done. I would imagine it's not going to stay that bad.
Yeah. So. I would think there's, with the talent on that roster, I would think they would start hitting a little better, but, you know, they may not.
I would think they would get better. Them and Auburn have really struggled the most offensively in the league, and it's just it's a little startling just to see that. I've always thought of Ole Miss as a very physical offensive team, a team with some real big bats, and that's just not what they've done this year. I mean, clearly last year's Omaha team isn't necessarily walking through that door. They did lose a lot of guys, but like the guys that you mentioned, you know, I like their athleticism. I like their roster. It just hasn't come through for them yet offensively. So I'm fascinated though by how the SEC is really quite ordinary in its depth this year outside that top tier of teams. And I guess Georgia is, Jim, the other team that's kind of made some noise this year. Georgia and Missouri really are the two teams in the SEC that have kind of exceeded expectations to this part.
Exactly. I mean, obviously Missouri has been kind of, you know, when I was writing them up the other day or for last week, it was kind of, I thought about it parallelly. You know, they've made their mark in football, where they've won the SEC East the last 2 years, if I recall right. But they've kind of, I mean, basically they've been the doormat in baseball. I mean, last year they were 6-24, and then I think they won 10 games their first year. But
we used to get the Mizzou football gear in here with Clint Longnecker.
Oh, that's right.
Family friends with the Pinkel family, I believe. Gary Pinkel, the football coach. So we used to get our, if you needed a Missouri football update, you'd get it from Clint Longnecker at the drop of a hat. So,
they only brought in some fresh talent on the mound with Reggie McClain and Tanner Houck. Their freshman's been outstanding. You know, and you just kind of like some of the guys in that that lineup. I mean, it's you know, it's not a great offensive team, and they still have that black mark of getting swept at home by Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Right.
Other than that, I mean, they've been solid. I mean, they had that one bad weekend. But other than that, they have been pretty consistent.
And what sticks out to me about Georgia is Georgia's doing it with Robert Tyler injured. Mm-hmm. You know, had the elbow strain. So he's been out of the weekend rotation. And they've had other guys kind of step forward, like Jared Walsh and Ryan Lawler are both pitching very, very well. Jared Cheek's been solid out of their bullpen, and their bullpen's been pretty good. And then you're looking at offensively, I mean, Steven Wren was kind of a tour de force this weekend, led off a game with a home run, stole some bases, got 16 steals on the year. I mean, he was a big deal recruit for them, and he's kind of starting to step forward for this team. So I'm really that's the thing that I guess that stands out the most to me about Georgia is that if you ask me to name one Georgia player before the year, it was Robert Tyler. You know, I had an evaluator tell me before the season he thought Robert Tyler was the closest thing to Steven Strasburg in the country this year. That was the guy with the electric arm, the body, the future pro potential. He was really going to step forward the most in the country this year. And he's been banged up, and they go and they still, you know, they got swept by Missouri. That doesn't help. But since then, they've won 5 out of 6.
Obviously, that's looking better for Missouri now. It's to their credit.
Exactly. So, you know, Georgia, very strange to look at their schedule for the year. See, they're 5-1 in the SEC on the road in league play, and 0-3. It is tough to do, and 0-3 at home. It's a little rivalry game this week. They got to get better this week because they've got 4 home games this week, and Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt are those 4 games. So. Not going to get the schedule never gets a lot easier. Next week they're midweek against Clemson. They still have Georgia Tech.
That is easy.
Clemson. the joke well made, and it gives us a good transition, a good segue to the Atlantic Coast Conference because the ACC seems similarly top heavy, guys, mm-hmm. right now, and at the top is Louisville, and making it look very easy in their first year in the league, guys. And Kyle Funkhauser pitches well this weekend. Brendan McKay's kind of making his freshman of the year case.
Yeah.
You know, Florida State, another strong weekend for the Seminoles. I guess the biggest weekend in the league really was Miami, because they go on the road against another considered top team in the ACC, and they take down North Carolina 2 out of 3 this weekend. Seems like Miami wins 2 out of 3 against North Carolina every year. Yeah. It feels like that's their shtick.
They're always the thorn in Carolina's side every year. It's always some kind of Miami trip or Miami coming there that derails them.
They have been, and the ACC Coastal kind of looks a little bit like the SEC West right now, where you've got Miami at the top, but they're the only team over 500 in league play. Are Miami, Louisville, and Florida State the top three strongest contenders, I guess, for hosting in the ACC? Is there a fourth, Jim, or could NC State even be that fourth?
I threw you off with
the NC State reference.
They catch me a little off guard, but I mean, if they obviously they have a huge opportunity this week with FSU coming to town. I mean, FSU was pretty much owned State over the last few years, even when Carlos Rodon, Trey Turner days, even those guys couldn't get it done against the Noles. But
remember last year, early in the ACC,
that was the first real red flag for
that was.
They went down there and got swept.
They didn't just get swept; they got like manhandled.
Yeah, they got pretty much crushed in those three games. I think they had one game where they lost in extra innings. But anyway, that was kind of the first real warning flag for that team. But I mean, but it is a big opportunity for the Wolfpack. I mean, 17-9. I mean, they're 17-9. That's a pretty solid record. I mean, they're about their best series win. I mean, that series win over Clemson. Sorry to keep making jokes at Clemson's expense. But,
they kind of deserve now. I think their fans probably are with you that
that's not looking so hot. I mean,
a lot of calls for Leggett's job.
Yeah,
from Clemson fans.
It really is, and that's college athletics these days. It used to be a kind of thing where if you had any success in your past as a college coach, you kind of got to write your ticket of when you left, and that's just not the way things are anymore. But Clemson 13-13 now overall, under 500 in the league, and again they had that series win against South CAC, and really since then it's been pretty miserable, and they lost a home series to Wake Forest this weekend, and North Carolina now those are two desperate teams. I think going at it next weekend because neither one's gotten right. Jim, I'll go back to State, like who this fourth team is. Mm-hmm. If NC State's going to be that fourth team, it's going to be because of its offense. Wolfpack really can hit this year.
They can. I mean, Joe Danan obviously got A-Rod's little nephew there. I mean, I think he's a talented freshman.
Won the third base job back basically in the last week and a half or so. Mm-hmm. They kind of sat him a little bit, now he responds with some power.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say Andrew Kisner, kind of the one named guy they had back from last year, who's kind of gotten off to a little bit of a slow start, if I recall right. But
kind of
expect him to get going. Obviously, he's learning catching, so that's you kind of expect his offense to take a little step back. But they have the best name in the country now in Brock Deathrage. I think you say Deathridge, but he's Deathrage in the office here.
Yes, as he always will be.
Dude that can really run. They've got some talent. We'll see, how their pitching holds up. Corey Wilder's a good arm. We'll see what he does this week.
It's a Friday night ACC arm. It's not a Friday night ACC pitchability.
Yeah. And obviously, he's still kind of a bit unproven. Obviously, he wasn't even a factor last year, if I recall right.
Yeah, nine innings last year. And when he's going well, it's effectively wild. Mm-hmm. When he's not, it's just wild. And that's kind of – so really NC State's weekend pitching staff, that's a big test for them against Florida State. I mean, you just saw it last week.
We wondered about it. Who is going to help DJ Stewart? They're finding the answers as they usually do.
Well, they had that 11-run inning.
I watched the end of their game yesterday with the Virginia Tech. I mean, they were – a strike away from losing that game, losing the series, and I think it was Josh Delph hits a little bouncer to Alex Perez, the Hokies' normally reliable senior second baseman, and he just kind of throws it over the first baseman's head and lets two runs score to lose the game for the.
I like the the sound effect though. We need a sound effect board to shoop.
But
it's a very quiet shoop on that bad throw because Alex Perez is like a Sports Center mainstay. I've seen him on SportsCenter Top 10 a few times.
But the Hokies almost with their second giant killing weekend after they swept UVA a couple weeks ago. But this is a big weekend for State. Looking at some of the other teams. I mean, Virginia gets back on track with they go and sweep Notre Dame, who had been playing pretty well. So the Cavs could. I don't think that it's not too late for them to get back into this hosting race. I mean, they kind of. there's been some damage done, but there's enough time for them to make up for it. And
That's what it seems like, guys.
Quality series left. They can kind of get going on. They still feel like they're kind of finding themselves again.
Feels like Florida State, Florida State, Louisville, Miami, as long as they don't collapse, they're in very good shape. NC State, Wake Forest, North Carolina, Virginia, those four teams, and Georgia Tech. Virginia Tech, I guess I should throw in there as well. It's like one of those teams could still emerge to be a regional host. I'm not sure who we think the best bet of those teams is, but recent history would probably tell us to bank on Virginia, and they did have a nice bounce back weekend this weekend.
Looking at Virginia coming into this season, especially once they lost McCarthy, you could kind of sense that they were going to have some ups and downs just with how young they are. You know, they were going to go through some tough stretches, so it didn't necessarily surprise me to see them struggle the last couple weeks, but they really did need a bounce back week this week, and they got it. I mean, going into Notre Dame and winning that series,
Notre Dame had really been hitting.
Yeah.
You know, they've been hitting against pretty good teams that were pitching better on paper than Virginia had been pitching. But
right.
It seems like Virginia, after struggling on the mound last week against Florida State, really got things right this weekend.
Well, it was after that last game against Florida State. All those pitchers were running up and down the stands as punishment for all the walks that they had. And you look at the three starters this weekend: Kirby just two walks in six innings, Jones just two walks in 7.2 innings, Waddell just two walks in 5.1 innings, which is a substantial improvement over what they did last weekend when that staff combined to walk 34 Seminoles, which is a staggering number even for a patient Seminoles team. So. I didn't expect that to be a continuing problem for them. Those pitchers are too good,
right?
Too talented. It's the top rotation in the ACC. I still think, and one of the best in the country. And as long as they're pitching well, they're always going to be in it. They're always going to be in the mix, I feel like. And if they can get McCarthy back healthy at some point, and they can get Adam Haseley to heat up, he had a home run this weekend and had a nice weekend. If he could hit up and live up to his potential, along with what Pavin Smith is doing in his freshman year, and Matt Theis has had a breakout sophomore season, you have a decent core in that lineup, too, where you mix in that excellent pitching with a little thump in the middle of the lineup, and I think they'll be okay.
I think they're in better shape. I know we've talked about North Carolina a lot this year, one of the reasons being that they're local, but two excruciating kind of losses for them to Miami, games that they were leading and lost. We'll see if Riley Hovis comes back. I think there was talk he was going to be back for the Miami series, but obviously he was not. It feels like that's the big question for North Carolina is their bullpen.
Right.
Trevor Kelly leads the country in appearances. They can't pitch him every day, every inning out of the bullpen. Someone else has to get it done back there. Is Trent Thornton, in your mind, Mike, is he just a little, baked is the right word? I mean, I hate to be harsh, but I mean, he's been used in multiple roles this year, and he hasn't been necessarily very good in either one. Do they have a plan B in their bullpen right now?
Well, I mean, even Mike Fox was really harsh about Trent Thornton this weekend. I asked him after he blew the save on Friday night, what's the deal with Trent? He's just like, he's not the same Trent Thornton. It's pretty evident that he's not the same Trent Thornton that he was. And you watch him, the stuff looks like it's down a tick.
Yeah, it just did not look as explosive on.
Yeah,
I was there on Saturday, and he did not look explosive like the same guy we've seen the last couple years.
We've always had the scouts worry about that. It's a very exaggerated delivery. It's a very long arm action with the stab down, and that it takes. It's not that it wouldn't take very much for that arm to start dragging. If the arm started dragging, that could lead to injury. Or just diminished fastball velocity. And in the bullpen, he used to bump 94 and sit 90-91. Sounds like he's not doing that anymore.
Well, I even saw him hit 95 a couple times his freshman year out of the pen.
Yeah.
And he's down more, 89, 90, 91. But the real problem with the fastball is the command isn't there.
Right.
He's not commanding the fastball. I thought his curve looked the best that I've seen it in a while, actually, on Friday night. It's just, he's unable to execute, make the pitches when he needs to make them, and Miami capitalized on that. And so UNC does have definitely a glaring problem in the bullpen because, Trevor Kelly can't pitch every inning of every game, and, they need to find another reliever that they trust. I think Nick Roquette, the freshman there, is starting to maybe move up the pecking order a little bit. Zach Rice is another lefty that they have who was a strikeout machine for them last year and could possibly be that guy. Spencer Traynor, too, is another guy that could throw himself in that mix. I mean, he's a 93, 94 kind of arm. Occasionally, he drops his arm slot a little bit.
Right.
Know, throws in some frisbees. But, you know, coming into this year, you'd think UNC's bullpen would be a strength.
Absolutely.
With all the arms that they had. And it's been kind of shocking to see the struggles so far.
But it's their biggest weakness is clearly their bullpen. I mean, like, you lose Wood Myers and you have an injury at shortstop, you think that would have been a problem for them. And so they've gotten better defensively since then. They've shored some things up, but it's been on the mound. Jim, what would you, and then Mike, you can weigh in too, what was your take on the Hurricanes? What impressed you most about Miami? I know Zach Collins, when he hits them,
I mean, I would say the overall tenacity of that team. I mean, they took several, gut punches in that game. I mean, both teams did, to be sure. But, I mean, you know, they get the lead in the top of the ninth. You know, Brian Garcia can't hold it. They take the lead again in the tenth. Garcia gives it up again. And they finally finally able to hold him off in the bottom of the 11th. But, I mean, Collins was obviously he made the biggest blow. I mean, yeah, he kind of won. I mean, Andy Suarez, which I guess he is Andy now, no longer Andrew.
That's
but,
right.
Andrew Suarez is not walking through that door. But, I mean, he struggled. He kind of was not commanding the fastball on Saturday. But, you know, obviously I wasn't there on Friday, but Thomas Woodry threw well. He's kind of not the, he wouldn't really, you expect Suarez to kind of retake that Friday role at some point. But, I mean, Suarez keeps giving, Woodry keeps giving him good outings. So, I guess they'll keep it the way it is. But, I mean, look at that series. I mean, they pretty much got outplayed in really most facets other than bullpen. I mean, like I said, Woodry was good on Friday, but Zach Allen probably outpitched him.
And Woodry's like the classic Miami Friday starter, which
and
is
Suarez only last three innings.
The,
you know,
the strike
Enrique Sosa gets knocked around Sunday. I mean, overall, it's a very tough lineup, very scrappy lineup. They got guys that can run at the top of the top there with Chester and Eusebio. So they got. And actually, Carolina, they did a pretty good job of keeping those guys off base. So it's kind of impressive that they were able to manufacture things without that. And I think it was their 10th inning rally. Actually, it was Eusebio finally did get on, and that was when they were able to make something happen and take the lead. But so they can beat you different ways. They got those guys that can run. Obviously, they got guys that can hit it out with Collins and Willie Abreu. But
it feels like Abreu and Collins are going to probably get hot at some point.
Exactly. Right.
And but until they do, David Thompson's kind of doing a nice job of carrying things himself.
Right. Yeah, a guy named David Thompson should not hit a walk-off home run against NC State, but that was what happened. But anyway, he's been scorching hot, and it's a versatile lineup, it's a deep lineup. That's probably been their carrying tool so far. But we'll see how that you expect the pitching to get better. I mean, Suarez isn't going to come out after three innings every week.
Right, right. How'd you like the U this weekend, Mike? A pretty good look at the Jim Morris's club?
Yeah. I got a good look at Woodry on Friday. And, like you guys were saying, I mean, he's a good college arm. I mean, he's going to throw strikes. He's, 85 tops with the fastball. He's not going to throw much harder than that.
Right.
But his changeup was on point. It was, 70s, 71 or so. He was getting hitters, swinging like some Bugs Bunny type swings,
Yeah.
So he's definitely, serviceable. He's definitely good in that rotation. He's been a rock for them so far this year. And
that is Miami's stock and trade. The mid-80s left-hander who throws a lot of strikes, has that good changeup, and is that J.D. Arteaga mold. I mean, it's been going on for 15 years with Jim Morris there, and it'll go on until he leaves.
And, I mean, he was very efficient, too. He came into the seventh inning with only 65 pitches.
Wow.
So things kind of unraveled a little bit. There was a call that didn't go his way at first base on a sack bunt, and then Corey Dunbar hits a homer to center field, which Corey Dunbar's been really hot for North Carolina.
Right.
He's more than serviceable. Suarez did not look good Saturday. He was fortunate that he only gave up, I think it was just the one run through three innings. He faced a couple bases loaded jams. The fastball command wasn't there for him. And it was more around 89, 90. He wasn't really touching anything higher than that throughout the game. His slider looked good. The curve was inconsistent. At times it had a decent snap to it, but other times it kind of just floated up there. So that's a little concerning. It's going to be interesting to see how he progresses coming back from from that injury.
Right.
Enrique Sosa on Sunday, I didn't see him, but you look at the stat line, it's not very pretty. And, you know, he's a guy, he's got to keep the ball down. He's a sinker slider guy. And
he didn't last long.
He did not last long. The UNC, maybe a little anger after blowing the previous two games, but they got to him early and often. So, I don't know. There's some question marks in that rotation. I think I do like their bullpen. I think even though Brian Garcia blew a save, I think he's a quality closer for them. I think Cooper Hammond is a submariner,
yeah.
A right-hander who's...
Coach Morris has always done that, too. Yeah,
he's filthy. He flipped in a few 64, 65-mile-per-hour breaking balls that were... I don't know how you hit those. But, you know, I do like the lineup. Zach Collins, you know, he does need to get going. He does literally have light tower power because he did hit the light tower.
Right.
At Boschmer Stadium. So that was certainly good to see for him if he can get his swing going this year. It hasn't really been there for him. You know, after hitting 11 homers this year, I would have thought he would have had like 30 by now or something right. Ridiculous with the new ball. But, yeah, no, I think it's definitely, we thought coming into this year that they're going to hit, and they have been hitting, and I think they'll continue to hit. It's just a matter of they can get healthy Andy Suarez, get him pitching to his capability. And
I like Andy. Yeah. I like Andy over Andrew.
I do too.
I think we're going to stick with that.
It has a better ring to it.
It does a little bit. It's a little bit less formal, a little more colloquial Andy. Yeah. So I think he'll, whichever one he pitches better under, he'll that's the one he's going to stick with. So if Andy's at 90-91, but Andrew's back at 95, he'll probably wind up back at Andrew. The stats still call him Andrew, so we'll see how that plays out over the course of things. But yeah, definitely. So those two leagues are pretty top heavy. The Pac-12 seems like it has a little bit better depth of top teams, guys. I know Arizona's schedule's been a little bit soft to this point, but a nice series sweep for them against Oregon. The Ducks are in trouble from being in our top 10 to being 2-7 in the league. There's a pretty good defined top tier of this league as well. UCLA 8-1 leads the league. They've won 8 straight games. You've got 5 teams in the league with 20 or more wins. Arizona State's the other team that only has 18, but is off to a 7-2 start in the league, guys, and they're holding steady in our rankings at number 11. Anything from the Pac-12 really stand out to you guys this weekend? I mean, I know Cal keeps on winning series even without they go on the road this weekend with Utah without Dalton Jeffries, but it seems like steady as she goes for Cal. Any of these teams stand out for you? Anything stand out in the Pac-12 for you this weekend, Mike?
Yeah, well. It's funny. I mean, talking to David Esker, the head coach over at Cal, you know, he thinks that the Pac-12 is absolutely stacked this year. He said he could see 6 or 7 teams earning a regional bid out of that conference, and you know that remains to be seen. But I think starting with Cal, Lucas Erceg has been, you know, he had another phenomenal weekend for them. Last weekend against Washington, he hit the game-winning home run, the go-ahead shot in the 8th inning, and both Friday and Saturday against Washington. And then homered again the next day. This weekend, he homered in the first 2 games of this series, adding 2 more. And he tripled on Sunday. You know, couldn't quite get it out of the yard. But
he's electric.
He's been great for them. You know, he's really stepped up in his sophomore year. You look at Chris Paul, he's having a great senior year for them. They have Brett Cumberland as a freshman catcher. He homered a couple times this weekend, and he's batting cleanup for them. He's really been a great bat, and you know they should get Dalton Jeffries starting on the mound soon. He's doing better now. He just was battling a little tendonitis, but if they get him back, you know, it's as soon as this week probably, if not the week after, you know, they have a decent pitching staff. I think they're a force to be reckoned with in that league. And you know, you look at Arizona State, they've all year long, I think the word that describes Arizona State best is just a really gritty, gutty kind of team. I mean, it's a team that maybe it's not the most talented team in the Pac-12, but they don't like to lose. They come back. They a lot of walk-off wins for them this year, and you know there's something to be said for that. You know,
I think there's a lot to be said for that. They are definitely a team that you have to get all 27 outs against them.
Yeah.
If they're 26, they still have a pulse. And we've seen that with North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's actually been their best trait under Mike Fox recently. Mm-hmm. But Arizona State, that's certainly something that Tracy Smith had in his days at Indiana. He's definitely taken that with him to Arizona State. One thing I'll throw in on Cal, well, 2 things. Number one, I was wrong. I forgot that they put lights in there in 2013. I said that last week. They do have lights at Evans Diamond now. Better late than never. Mm-hmm. Number two, I will always have to admit that I have this soft spot for the Bears. with their high number of Greek American players on this team. And while they've Nick Hallamandris has fallen out of the a starting role, Dennis Karras is starting to play a little bit. And Karras is usually a Greek last name, especially when it's with a K. Mm. And they have John Sotiropoulos, who I think is cousin Pete. I still play Pete's very good defensively at Words with Friends. So. Okay. Pete was a 2004 Greek Olympic team member, so
yeah.
He can thank me for getting him on that team. It had nothing to do with his ability, everything to do with me finding his name. But Ryan Mason has kind of been this guy as for 3-4 years who's just been very steady in their weekend rotation, eats up a lot of innings for them, ground ball kind of guy. That it just doesn't feel like Cal's going to go away anytime soon. And Jim, USC and Oregon State are only 4-2 in the league, but those teams... have been very, very consistent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been more of our bubble watch kind of stock report kind of guy. How do these teams kind of how's the Pac-12 faring in the RPI, and who has the inside track in this league to hosting and maybe being a top eight national seed? Seems like UCLA, I guess, is still at the top because they played a pretty stout non-conference schedule.
Yeah, UCLA is definitely up there. I think you'll see where. Let's see where Cal is.
Because Arizona State's strength of schedule is very high.
That should be very high.
Looking at it on Warren Nolan, they're 4 in strength of schedule and 8 in the RPI ranking. So those two teams seem like they have the inside track. But I guess you kind of wonder, talent-wise, if they can hold off, say, an Oregon State if they get hot with this freshman-heavy team, or a USC, which clearly has had a good start to the year. Oregon State and Oregon both are a little bit lower in your RPI than you kind of would like to see, just in terms of the schedule.
Yeah, Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean...
We're building a Jim Schoenert soundboard here. We've got
my own soundboard.
We've got woo.
I mean, look at this. I mean, even in the... David Peterson's getting knocked around now. I mean, they're not... Cole Irvin has got hit hard by Arizona. I mean, Arizona's a good offensive team, but that is... I mean, honestly, we kind of wrote in our recaps, they're... Defense just imploded. Yeah. At least 2 of the games they lost, if not all 3. But
I'm a real big fan of that Arizona lineup.
Yeah,
Seen them.
I mean, so it's not an embarrassing series loss on just in a vacuum. But I mean, the way they lost and to get swept, that is not a good look. The fact they've lost 3 straight series, I mean,
not a good look.
It is. Obviously, they've still got. I mean, they do have a good series win at UCSB, so they've got that going for them. But they have not. They're 2-7.
They haven't capitalized on that at all.
They're 17-11, and I mean, they're falling down the pecking order. That's for sure. I mean, they're still high in the RPI because they played a good note because they played a bunch of road games. But the first 3-4 weeks of the season or so, and that was when they were, when they were healthy, they were. They were pretty much at full strength and everything, so they were. They won a bunch of games. I think. After this weekend, they're just 8-7 on the road, but they started hot, so that was, good for obviously 1-3 out of 4 at Hawaii. They won at UCSB, but
really,
few weeks, it's
you kind of think Jim. At that point, they win that series at UCSB on the road, and Cole Irvin's coming off as Tommy John. You kind of feel like their momentum would start going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It kind of went in the wrong direction. Now, Mike, I'm just looking at the rest of this league. So Arizona sweeps them. Now, Arizona's got 3 of its first 4 league series at home with Utah, Oregon, and now this week USC. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw USC, a veteran team, pretty good weekend rotation for the Trojans. Again, on the mound, feels like that's where Arizona's a little bit shy.
Right.
And Arizona hasn't played a great schedule. The Oregon series is clearly their best series win. They had the series loss at home to Rice, and then they went on the road against Mississippi State and lost a couple of those games, and those don't look as good anymore. But how does Arizona kind of match up with USC? It feels like that's a pretty important series for the Wildcats, because then they go on the road at ASU and Oregon State. It feels like Arizona kind of has to start making some hay here. And what's your take on the Trojans, how they've capitalized since the big Dodgertown weekend for them?
Yeah, I mean, the Trojans haven't slowed down so far. They're continuing. I keep hearing great things about Garrett Stubbs, their catcher there. I mean, even Dave Esker, the Cal head coach, was like, yeah, Garrett Stubbs, he's one of the top igniters in this league. One of the top bats. So he's been great for them, and the pitching continues to be good for them. And I think they have staying power. I think this is going to be the year that they get back. to the tournament. And I think you look at this Pac-12, and I think that, I mean, the top of the SEC is still, you know, the top in the country in our poll. Right. But I think you look at the depth of this Pac-12, and I think you can make an argument that it might be the deepest conference in college baseball this year. I mean, the Ducks are showing some quacks in the armor right now. But I needed to throw that pun in there. I've been holding it for a while.
I wish Josh Norris were here for that.
Both of you. If we need him in the audience
from
here.
From the pun part and the Oregon part, that was outstanding.
But outside of them, I mean, you look UCLA, look at USC. I mean, Arizona. I mean, you got a good look at them when you were in Arizona. You know, they can hit.
They can really hit.
And it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch how this all shakes out. I still think. In terms of depth, in terms of the veteran presence, I think UCLA has a good chance to be the top team in that league. But you can't argue with what the Trojans have done so far, and Arizona State isn't far behind either.
Right.
I mean, they've been really impressive this year to me, just from the competitive standpoint.
And Brett Lillick's pitching really well, threw nice 7 innings on Sunday. That's a pretty good Sunday starter, a power left-handed experienced arm that you could throw on Sunday.
Well, he hadn't been pitching well
before
then, so that's a really big development for them. I mean, I looked it up last week. I think he was averaging
about
4 innings of start, which, you know, you need more than that, obviously. So him, if he can get going, he has the stuff to be a very good Sunday starter.
That's a big development for them, because that's a guy they were counting on coming into the year. So if they get him closer to the form they expected, Arizona State's going to be dangerous. The Wildcats, you know, Kevin Newman is really, you know, living up to his billing. The guy's hit .377 over the last 2 years in the Cape.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a first-round pick if he keeps playing like this. And,
right.
You know, he's got more walks than strikeouts. He's hitting .420. The buzz out there on Scott Kingery was great. The scouts out there who were there to see Newman, who've all been following him all year, have all been woken up to Scott Kingery, who's hitting .450-plus right now. Exactly. I mean, that's the reaction they've all had. You know, he's only hitting .426. You're 27 points behind Kingery, so... I think it'll be fascinating as USC, which just kind of held down. You know, not like UW has a great offense, but USC gives up, what, like 10 runs all weekend to Washington?
Like 15 shutout, or I guess they gave up, it was 15 shutout innings, and then they gave up a couple in the 16th, but yeah.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, that was a crazy game. It's a crazy box score to look at, the 15 scoreless inning game. And then three in the top of the 16th and two in the bottom.
Yeah.
Very strange series. I have to get in my Ray Tanner impersonation. But I'm looking forward to that USC-Arizona matchup. That's going to be a good matchup. And I agree with you. I think the Pac-12 is a little bit deeper in terms of teams that are threats to go to Omaha.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if any of those three top SEC teams don't go to Omaha, I think we'll all be shocked.
Yeah.
But... it'd be you can't pick. I should say four, because Florida's definitely in that conversation. But it'd be a surprise if one of the other teams in the league did. Whereas the Pac-12, I guess I'd be surprised if UCLA wasn't good enough to get to Omaha by the end of the year. But any of these other teams we talked about could get there. And the other team, we haven't talked much about this league this year. We should probably hit on the Big 12 real quick, guys, because Texas steps out of conference and loses to Nebraska. TCU remains at the top. We moved Oklahoma State up, and then we talked a little bit about them last week, about how they've played well. But this is the opposite of these other leagues. This is not a deep league. This league looks like the top. They kind of are who we thought they were. Four Big 12 teams that we had ranked high early, and Texas, TCU, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. I haven't seen an Oklahoma or a Baylor or those kind of teams step forward. And the collective RPI of this league, Jimmer, and you got West Virginia, not West Virginia, Kansas and Kansas State really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor under .500. This, you saw a couple of these teams in the Big 12, in the Houston College Classic. This league seems like it's a four bid league. Am I crazy, or is there a possible fifth bid here?
I think we had it as four. I think Oklahoma was the one team that was kind of on the borderline. I remember, you know, when we were kind of looking at those, you know, in the preseason, you had the four top teams with Texas, TCU, Oklahoma State. And Texas Tech.
Right.
And then you kind of had Oklahoma in the middle, and then another gap to the bottom four. And that's, I mean, we'll say, I mean, that's pretty much how it's shaping up.
And Oklahoma's RPI is very low. They're at 93.
Yeah, they're down there. And then
96,
West Virginia is actually pretty high in the RPI, mostly because they probably played a lot on the road. And then, but I mean, they're off to a decent start. But, I mean, it's... you don't really see more than, I can't see more. Yeah, it's really just those four teams plus, you know, see what Oklahoma does. I mean, they're 18-12, but they've kind of hit the skids a little bit. But I mean, that's yeah, I'd say that league is pretty much what we thought it would be.
Yeah, it hasn't been a surprise. There really hasn't been a surprise there. And then when you look at the Big Ten, that's another league we talked about in the preseason as a league that we thought would have more teams to regional than you're used to. Maybe that was part of that, was just adding Maryland and Rutgers, but not necessarily that Rutgers was the factor here. But they're more teams, so a little higher probability. But Nebraska comes back into our top 25 rankings, well, back in, first time this year, by winning that series against Texas, old Big 12 grudge match. But they sweep that series. They win a game midweek against Cal State Fullerton as they split that series. You've got Nebraska off to a great start in the league. Maryland is off to a good start in the league. Illinois is off to a great start overall. Indiana has had a great, you know, a good start, but before this weekend happened, and this weekend happened as they get swept by Iowa. This league looks very deep and competitive, guys. Yeah. And I'm not sure how the RPI is going to shape up, but this league feels like it's got five or six regional caliber teams. I'm not sure how many bids necessarily they're going to get, but from a regional caliber standpoint, Jim, I mean, like, I like this league. I still like this league. We're 7 weeks in. I still like this league even a little bit more than I used to like it.
Exactly, yeah. And I think when I wrote up Iowa for weekend preview, I quoted Rick Heller in there saying the Big Ten is the best he's seen it. And that's a guy that's been in the Midwest his whole coaching career. And
right.
I mean, it really is. I mean, obviously, I was saying adding Nebraska and Maryland has been a big plus for the league as a whole. But I mean, all these programs have stepped up. I mean, Michigan State has stepped up. I mean, they're obviously they're 500, but I mean, they've stepped up that program in recent years. Illinois has gotten better. We've talked a lot about Indiana over the years. I mean, Michigan has obviously got they've hosted a regional recently, and so we've had three straight years of a Big Ten team hosting a regional with Indiana the last 2 years and Purdue the year before. And I think I would bet on it being they're going to make it four straight. I mean, to me, I think Nebraska would be a very attractive candidate because they've got the great ballpark. They draw 5,000 fans a game. And obviously, they haven't hosted in a few years, so I'm sure NCAA would probably love to get one back there. And if they win the Big Ten, or whoever wins the Big Ten, assuming they, I don't think Iowa probably doesn't have the facilities, if they were to do it, but any of those other teams, I would bet on whoever wins the Big Ten regular season hosting a regional again.
I agree, and they might get two. I'm just looking at some RPIs in the Big Ten. So Iowa, I mean, it's 7 weeks. We're halfway through the regular season. Iowa's up at 11 in the RPI. That's crazy. So we'll elaborate more on off of your weekend preview, which proved prescient as the Hawkeyes go and sweep this series. But Iowa's at 11. Nebraska's at 18. Ohio State's 24. Illinois's 28. Michigan State's 47, and Maryland's 55. All those teams are in your at-large, and Indiana's 33, by the way. I left them out. All those teams are in the at-large range from an RPI standpoint. Mm-hmm. Now, the more they play each other, and they're all northern teams and yada yada, their RPI is going to come down. Mm-hmm. So that's just natural. But for now, you've got that many teams, like seven teams, in this at-large mix, just for getting an at-large bid. And if Iowa keeps winning, guys, if one team wins, if an Iowa, Maryland, Nebraska, these kind of teams, Illinois, one wins the regular season, one wins the conference tournament, that kind of thing, I think you could see a couple teams here host. It would not shock me. And I guess my other point of this is that these teams are earning it by the way they're playing. And I was stunned that Iowa was able to go and sweep that series. Jimmy,
that's a big statement for that. I mean, that's a program that no real tradition. They've been so they actually do have a College World Series trip in their history in 1972 or something like that.
Wow, upset! I did not know that.
They've only ever been to regionals two other times in the 100 years or whatever. But I mean, to go and sweep Indiana, I mean, that's a big deal. And Rick Heller talked a lot about their, how much excitement there is in there. They've done some investing in their ballpark. They've put in a new playing surface. They're putting up a new scoreboard and all that kind of deal. So, you know, the Big Ten Network money is making a difference there. But
you had a big time pitching matchup on a Saturday in that league with that in that series with Kelser against Hickman.
Exactly.
You know, Kelser got that big time slider and had some late draft helium last year when he was draft eligible. Excuse me. So Indiana loses the first game, but they still have Kelser and Efros, and they wind up getting swept. And Efros doesn't even last out of the first inning. So that was no joke in my mind that Iowa wins that sweeps that series.
And the fact they've been doing it with pitching, I mean,
that's it.
That's a that was the big problem for them last year. I mean, they could hit, and they got a lot of those guys back. I mean, I thought that team looked intriguing in the preseason, mostly because of the hitters they had back. But they've been doing it with pitching, and that's been impressive.
And Tyler Payton, is the, kind of the other guy, throws a complete game shutout. This was a two-way guy last year, hit 330 for Iowa. And, I don't think I think they expected him to be a contributor, but I don't think they expected him to be their Friday guy. And that's Hickman's, the converted catcher, the top 100 prospect. I mean, that's kind of the guy they were expecting to be the Friday guy. But Payton's been tremendous, and I think it's really impressive for them to sweep that series when they had some expectations and they knew it was a big deal and they come through and execute with it. You know, Rick Heller did a nice job in Northern Iowa. Pretty sure he took them to regionals. Indiana State, you know, Sean Manaea is a first-round pick. Where do you think that came from? Rick Heller. You know, the prospects and the talent that he brought there and regional biz they brought there. And now he's doing it at Iowa. Very, very impressive coaching resume for a guy who I don't think has ever really thought of that way. And you kind of wonder, I shouldn't think of it this way, but to me, Rick Heller is the kind of guy that if you're an ACC or an SEC school and you've got a lot of money to spend on a baseball program and you're looking for a coach who can really go win and build a program, this is a guy who could do it. And I don't know how much money Iowa spends on baseball coaches' salaries or what their ceiling is, but I'm guessing it's lower than an SEC or ACC school. So I don't know if Rick Heller would ever leave the Midwest because he's been in that Iowa in footprint for a long time. I thought that the Iowa job, I remember talking to him a long time ago, how the Iowa job was his dream job then. And now he's making that dream a pretty impressive reality. So I'm just very impressed with him and the job they did. And that's a huge series sweep for them. I don't know Mike, if you wanted to weigh on that or anything else in the Big Ten, but that was a hashtag statement. They're not even a team with state in their name, but a hashtag statement for them.
All I can say is obviously Jim has the magic touch in Weekend Preview. You know, he's written about Missouri too. Now he's
written about
Iowa. I think if you're a head coach and you get a call from Jim Schoenert this week, you should expect big things.
Exactly.
I like that thought process. And we did bring in, Coastal Carolina, another Jim Schoenert
exactly.
pick.
Yeah.
He just wrote a big feature on their stadium. So
that's right.
And he's got the magic touch, the Midas touch.
And then we brought in San Diego. That's the little, I'm going to give you some credit for that. You saw San Diego when they just started getting rolling.
Yeah.
I guess you saw them midweek against Cal State Fullerton,
yeah,
right?
I saw them near the end of that role where they won, I think it was 6 or 7 road games, and it was all against ranked opponents at the time. Of course, they were Texas and Mississippi State, which they're not ranked anymore. But at the time, it was very impressive. And they started off 2-6. They've been 14-3 since then. And, it's a talented team, and it's a team that's doing it differently than they have in years past. They don't have Chris Bryant there anymore, you know, crushing balls out of the ballpark. I thought it was funny. I talked to Rich Hill, their head coach, about that, and he was like, "Yeah, man, Chris Bryant really picked the wrong time to play here, didn't he? You know, because I mean, he still hit 31 home runs and
indeed he did
in a dead ball kind of era. So
there's no wrong time for Chris Bryant. We'll just put it that way. Every time's the right time for that guy, even though he was sent down today to AAA for the first couple weeks of the season, which makes all kinds of sense. It tells you how dumb that
the world is still on its axis, are you sure?
It is, I know. It's amazing. Huh? We're still spinning.
Yeah. So, but no, San Diego, I mean, they're doing it with pitching and defense with, obviously, Kyle Holder, John's man crush Monday.
Kyle Holder.
Yeah, he's anchoring that defense.
Cute.
And they have the Hill brothers pitching really well too, one out of the pen, one in the weekend rotation. So they're they have talent. A lot of JUCO transfers filling in the gaps on that team.
And that's kind of the other thread that goes through here. And I've talked to some scouts about this year, just the way that and it goes back to the coaching thing we just were talking about, or that I was railing about, ranting, whatever.
Yeah.
There's a lot more pressure on these coaches to win. We talked about with Jack Leggett. There's more pressure to win.
Yeah.
And that means less time for development and less time spent on freshmen and sophomores if you don't. necessarily trust them, and you're going to go see more junior college recruiting. I think that's going to happen more and more.
Yeah.
Junior college, is, I've always said, is a great option if you're coming out of high school and you'd rather play pro ball. You don't really necessarily want to go to school, but you'd rather play baseball. Well, you're going to play more at a junior college.
Right.
As a freshman, it's easier to play there because you'd have less competition from juniors and seniors, and they play fewer restrictions, more practice time, more games in the fall.
Yeah.
I always thought it was a great option for I've told parents this for years. And now you see a team like San Diego going out and doing it with junior college guys. That tells you this trend's not going anywhere. And I'll just point out that Kyle Holder is now hitting .389.
Mm-hmm.
More walks and strikeouts. He's made one error all year. And had two different scouts this weekend. One gave him an 8 range. One gave him a 7.
Yeah.
And both put, well, one guy put 7 on his arm. The other one was a little bit less sanguine on his arm strength. But this guy's probably the best defensive player in the country. Mm-hmm. He's the best defensive shortstop. So he's the best defender at the most important defensive position, if you ask me. So this is a carrying tool, like you're talking about, Jim. And they've got multiple ways to beat you, too. It's a very good offensive team. Riley Adams is an impact freshman when he's healthy. And this team's just, you know, I like the look of the Toreros. That's not the only reason. We all like the look of the Toreros. That's why they're back in the top 25.
It took them a while to get over the Morehead State series. They had to make up some ground.
It did.
Get back in our good graces. But, yeah, I mean, that's been a consistently successful program. And they've done it different. I mean, we kind of think back to when I first started here, there was during the Brian Mattis days. They were all about pitching. And then
I think Brian Mattis is about to get traded to the big leagues. Did he get traded this weekend? I may have missed it.
he did give up a homer to Alex Rodriguez.
That marks saying you got to get rid of him then.
I think that's what the Orioles are thinking. But there's a decent amount of Brian Mattis buzz that he's going to get traded in the major leagues this year. So he hasn't worked out the way that we thought he would out of college. But they were a pitching program.
Yeah,
back
when I first started here, it was all about those guys. And then obviously they get Bryant, and they become an offensive powerhouse. And we've just kind of been waiting for them to kind of have that break. Obviously they've won a lot of games. They've won a lot. They've had great regular seasons. We've just kind of been waiting for them to actually do it in the postseason. That's kind of been the one missing link in their resume.
Well, speaking of missing links in the resume, let's just finish up with, we have some podcast questions to get to, but teams that were just outside the top 25 that didn't get in, Nevada, the quick hit, I guess, on them, we would know how offensive they are, but Mike, basically they didn't get in because they haven't played anybody. I have them written down as Pacific, Cincinnati, UNLV, Abilene Christian, Fresno State, New Mexico. Just not a great resume for this team, but offensively they're about as good as it gets in college baseball this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's they really, you look at their schedule, and they're not really going to play anybody.
Right.
So, I mean, in order to get in the top 25, they're just going to have to keep winning, honestly. I mean,
it's going to be volume of wins.
Yeah, volume of wins more than anything. I mean, their strength of schedule isn't probably not going to be there.
Who's a volume scorer? I'm thinking, like, if you hear that term so much for volume scorers in college, T.J. Warren was that kind of guy last year in college basketball. Dominique Wilkins was a volume scorer. He needed his shots back in the day. This is a volume. They're gonna have to do it with volume wins,
and they score in volumes too.
They do score. They're a volume home run team with Ryan Howell and Austin Beiler, this tremendous middle of the lineup tandem. Kentucky was close. I guess Florida Atlantic. That's the other team that we kind of
Kind of been on the radar every week. Yep. We haven't had the kind of the breakthrough weekend for them.
Yeah, losing 14-3 to Texas San Antonio this weekend isn't a great loss.
If you're going to have one loss, don't have it be 14-3. That was a big part of the problem.
That's a giant stinker right there.
That did not help their cause. Well, podcast questions. Paul Norwine, self-styled Baseball America podcast enthusiast, emailed us last week about being a Purdue season ticket holder. So he's very excited about the Hawkeyes coming into West Lafayette this weekend, which that's got to be the first time anyone has ever said that or emailed us.
I was wondering if this was the first time Iowa's ever been on our top 25 worksheet.
I think that probably
first
is.
Time ever.
But his main question, a week after not being impressed by Kentucky or Mississippi State, he sees Kentucky go and then win a series at LSU. He'll ask again, is the SEC overrated? I guess I would say I don't think they're overrated this year or any year. The proof's been in the pudding for that program, that league. But maybe I do think it's fair to say we think it's a little top-heavy league this year. Is that a consensus in this nook?
Yep.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's kind of strange because the first couple weeks of the season they looked like by far the deepest league in the country, and then things have since then kind of polarized a little bit with the top obviously looking a lot stronger than the rest of that conference. But I don't think they're overrated. I think the top of that conference is still the top in the country.
Yeah, I think the top four teams in the SEC are in the top four, and then we don't have anyone else until South Carolina at 18. So I think they're fairly properly rated.
Yeah.
Now, Paul also has watched a lot of Arizona State this year, both in person in Arizona and on the live stream. It is his opinion that Tracy Smith has them believing like he got IU to believe. My opinion is ASU would take a three-game series from any team in the country. Your thoughts? Jim, I guess to me it's a matchup issue. Mm-hmm. With Kellogg and Lilick, if they're going well and you're a lefty-loaded lineup, it's going to be tough. But I don't see a ton of pitching depth necessarily from Arizona State. And it feels like they're not the kind of team that can really get into a slugfest with a team. Like if a Nevada got some runs on the board, Arizona State's probably not a slugfest kind of team. What's your take on the Sun Devils?
Yeah, I mean, they can hit, but they're built more to win 5-4 than 10-9.
Right.
I think that's kind of where they're at. I mean, obviously they do have some talent. I mean, Brian Servin hit a couple home runs, and we like Colby Woodmansey, who also has another awesome name. But
it's a fun name to say for sure.
But yeah, I mean, and Jordan Aboitis has been a kind of a valuable two-way guy for them, you know, kind of in that middle relief role. And obviously we do like Ryan Burr's got a big arm out of the bullpen. But
Burr's name always makes me think of the Reese's peanut butter commercials. I think it was. No, it was some peanut butter, the Aaron Burr. The guy can't say Aaron Burr because his mouth's full of peanut butter. I don't know.
That just went over my head.
That's a great commercial from like 10 years ago when you were 12. So
yeah.
That's the problem. But it's also not funny.
Yeah. But and I think, as I recall, I think it's not a very home run friendly ballpark at Phoenix Muni.
It's a pro park.
Yeah,
I mean, it's bigger.
Like, it's like the same deal as with Arizona moving to the name of the stadium is now.
High Corbett.
But, I think Arizona State would probably take their chances against anybody at home. I think it would be, like I say, probably depend on the matchups and depend on kind of just where the run scoring environment, as it were.
Yeah, no, but I like the way that they have developed, and they'd be a challenge for any team. And then, Jim, this is probably more of a question for you, but Tucker Blankenship, longtime NC State fan, wants to know if NC State can emerge. I think we've kind of hit on that. Like, NC State does have a chance to be that sixth or fifth ACC team, but is that going to be a high-scoring series them in Florida State? It feels like
Pitched this weekend, it could be.
Yeah, exactly.
Their guys were getting knocked around by Virginia Tech, so
that just feels like whichever team throws more strikes wins that series.
Pretty much. And that's always the thing with Florida State. You got to throw strikes, or they will walk you to death.
They definitely will. We also had Miles MKlotz8 on Twitter ask us what we think of UNLV, what the problem with UNLV is. I didn't even know there really was a problem with UNLV. I know one of the problems with UNLV is that Tim Chambers had back surgery. So when you lose your head coach, that usually doesn't help. So that's one reason why they're 2-10 in the Mountain West Conference and 12-14 overall. And in fact, I would say that's the number one reason. But the other reason is they played a little bit of a tougher schedule. San Diego State's tough. Nevada's tough. Fresno State. Those are all pretty solid teams that they've played. So, but the number one thing for me is, they did win that opening series against Nebraska,
yep.
Which kind of I probably think got people's hopes up a little bit. But back surgery for your head coach, that's always difficult. And Tim Chambers, obviously did a great job of JC of Southern Nevada. That's just a very difficult thing to overcome when you have a guy who runs your program, is the identity of your program, and he's not there anymore. So I also do want to throw in that one of his another recruit they have from JC Southern Nevada, Dylan Ellis, who leads their team. He's hitting .397. If you go to their website, Dylan Ellis has got one of the best mustaches. It's like an Eric Fetty mustache from last year, but with the handlebars turned up at the end.
Might have Sykes Orvis beat then.
It's. I'm not sure if it's better than Sykes Orvis or not because I haven't seen Sykes's this year, but that's a quality mustache that Ellis has. So.
I think at some point we're going to need to have a mustache rankings or something.
A mustache bracket.
Yeah. Yes.
I like that idea.
Get rid of this poster contest. Let's have a mustache contest.
Yeah.
Josh Norris.
I was about to say, don't hurt Josh Norris's feelings. This podcast gets longer every week, but we appreciate all the great feedback on Twitter, great over the email. You guys can shove Paul aside, our Purdue fan, but a great podcast enthusiast. But email us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Follow Mike at mlanana on Twitter, at Jim Schoner, BA. I'm at John Manuel, BA, or at John Manuel, BA, not ought. I'm at John Manuel, BA. Well, I'll be back next Monday with another curiously long edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.